Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast. Tried a little new opener there. We'll mix our mixer up as we are officially into the mock draft season. Scott Manzi, Alex Turco, both here with you, drinking a couple beers, breaking down all the hot topics in sports for the most part. Sometimes I throw some other stuff in there here on the Sports Bar Podcast. Scott, for some reason, it feels like I haven't seen you in a while.
I know it's been slightly over a week, and we're usually so on that weekly schedule, if not sooner, then yeah, it does feel a little bit weird that we haven't convened sooner than this. But you know, there was this an early podcast last week, this thing called the Super Bowl, a little bit of a conflict on Monday night, and here we are on Tuesday getting it done.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we're officially done with real football. I know there's some other imposter leagues popping up here.
We might mention those a little bit later on in the show.
Looking forward to it. Mock draft season's back.
Yes.
You know, basketball season.
Yeah, we're not getting into mock drafts yet. I can't. We've got months for that.
I really don't even want to entertain it because it's all speculation.
Yeah, and as far as the teams that I'm concerned about in their drafts anyway, we're going to get to that a little bit later too, and how I'm slightly annoyed with how things have gone down with my NFL franchise here lately of choice.
Yeah. Oh, man. There is a lot to discuss there with that franchise, the unnamed franchise there. Yeah.
Soon to be named here later.
Yeah, soon to be named. But, you know, what's shaking the headlines here outside of the Super Bowl, of course, and Shakira and J-Lo shaking a lot of ass and a lot of ass.
there were shaking being done.
There were asses shaking for sure. Nice little Miami vibe to that, though. I know we were just talking to Ashley about it before we hopped on here, and I guess some people weren't happy with it. And I said, "Who's not happy with it?"
Like, I mean, it felt like that
I didn't hear people not happy about that.
There was the perfect. It was the perfect kind of encapsulation of the community and
so
picking
Miami.
Musical acts that reflected that. How about
also, what did they expect?
Like, no,
you don't
exactly,
sign up for Shakira and J-Lo and think that there wasn't going to be shit. There was a prop bet that said, "Is there going to be ass butt cleavage?"
Those
direct prop bet.
They're a great. Great exposure of one of those like local news stations in like I think it was Erie, Pennsylvania that posted a "Were you offended by the Super Bowl halftime show" question on Facebook, and then the first response was all about like, "This is what is this? We wonder why our women are getting murdered in the streets and things like that." But the funny thing was, it was the same account commenting on it. It was still the TV station's account. The person who had posted it forgotten to log out or switch their account or whatever,
and commented on
on their own poll. So it's like, well, you got exposed there.
Yeah, that's not a good look.
A great lesson in corporate social media.
That's not a good look at all. I mean, there's been guys in the past, corporate-wise, who run social media accounts and then accidentally, like, retweet porn or something.
Right, right. Yeah, like, I had a little snafu the other night, but it's just that I accidentally tweeted something from the baseball account that I wanted to tweet from the basketball account.
Oh.
It was not porn. it was all JU-related, but it was just the wrong sport. And
I was working for...
I was like, dang it. It's so frustrating when you do that.
I was... Rivals.com, I was a social media intern there where I ran all their social media platforms while I was in college for a year. And that year that I was running the platform, our manager sent out an email. Legitimately, that story I mentioned about a CEO or something who had access to the company account accidentally retweeted literal porn from the company account, didn't know, and then, you know, obviously that didn't go over well.
Didn't know.
But I didn't mean to bring us down that rabbit hole. But
hey, you did a Super Bowl get-together here on Sunday. That's the other reason why I haven't seen you, because I went to a separate Super Bowl.
You're too cool for us.
Yeah.
Hey, Scott, having a Super Bowl get-together, would love for you to come over, grilling out. You don't have to bring anything, cold beer, ton of food. No, I got plans.
Well, sick brag by me because I have other friends, but yeah, I was able to go to a different house. It was an opportunity to hang out with a different group. It was their first kind of get together that they hosted at their house, so it was cool to be a part of that. And I got to bring the ice meal cooler along and got some compliments.
Did you tell them about our promo code?
You know what? Wow, what a whiff on my part. But I will
text
go back and I
right
will send
now.
Them all right now. But yeah, they liked it, and I was able to get plenty of beers for me and a friend
there,
and we had a good time. And it was.
Did you have ice in there also?
Oh, I had ice in there.
So how many beers do you think you fit?
I fit 10, and I had plenty of room
for
more.
Yeah, okay. I told you.
Plenty of room for more, and did not drink all 10. There were two of us, and we still had a couple that we took home, so we were trying to be responsible. But you always want to bring more than not enough.
I agree with that, but it would have been a lot cooler if you did all 10, slugged them all.
You know how it is, Super Bowl night. You just want to make sure you're not the drunkest guy on the road.
The problem is, not the drunkest. I think that is the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office slogan. Don't be the drunkest guy on the road.
He's got to outrun the bear. You don't want to be the slowest person, right?
You know, I this whole debate of should we have Monday off, should it be on a Saturday, I really want us to take action as a country and do something about it because – or the NFL, that is. I say it kind of tongue-in-cheek, ha-ha, but really it's, why the hell is it on a Sunday evening? Can't we just move it? There's nothing else going on that Saturday. Make it easy. You don't have to call off work Monday. Just move it to Saturday, and let's all be done with
it. Here's my hot take. Super Bowl is the best championship for as far as day and time. College football playoff, we sat here at a game that kicked off after 8:30 on a Monday and didn't end until after midnight on a work night. The Super Bowl was over at 10:30 this year.
Oh, 10:30. No. I'm with
plenty
you on
of
the
time
timing.
For people to go to bed. The NBA playoffs, for some reason, on Wednesday start an hour, or on Sundays, start an hour later than they normally do. It's an 8 o'clock normal tip. For some reason, they say, hey, it's Sunday. No one's working today. Let's start at 9 o'clock Eastern. That makes even less sense. The World Series starts at 8 o'clock every game, and those games last 4 hours. The Super Bowl's phenomenal. I was able to sit there, watch the whole game, hang out for an extra hour and talk with friends and still get to bed and not feel like I was a complete zombie the next day.
I feel the same way. I'm not saying I was ruined on Monday, but the reason I wasn't is because in the back of your mind, you always know, hey, I have work tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that's true.
I'm
going to work a golf tournament every year the day after and be in Sawgrass by like 7 in the morning. And that is honestly one of my worst work days as far as getting up early. So, I mean, sure, if it would have been on Saturday, I wouldn't have to worry about that. But I like it's kind of right around dinner time, perfect to, get some food and
Scott,
snack.
Scott, you are missing my point.
I'm just saying the time.
I don't want the time to change. Even on a Saturday, it's not like I need primetime kick. I think this is the best time because, personally, college football, full football picture here, if you're looking at both leagues, NCAA and NFL, 3:30 kicks are my favorite when it comes to – or even 4:30 NFL. That's my favorite time.
Yeah, it's
so
a good time.
I think the Super Bowl being at 6:30 or 6:45 whenever it actually kicked off was perfect.
It was just about ready to bet 6:30
on that. I'm not disagreeing.
I
think the kickoff time is perfect. That's not my issue. My issue is just move it to Saturday. They already celebrate the whole week, Super Bowl week.
But Super Bowl Sunday has such a ring to it.
Are they really doing it for the ring? They might be. They might be.
They may be. Hey, I just want to find a way to get to the national championship game for college football off Monday night.
That's what started our whole get off my lawn segment.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, because that is just brutal.
It's tough.
That is brutal. Okay, well, you know what? We survived it. It was a good Super Bowl.
It was a very good Super Bowl. It was a little slow out of the gate.
Yeah.
But there was drama throughout, which made it, it kept you locked in, even though there wasn't a lot of scoring. And then, of course, it ended with some fireworks with the Kansas City Chiefs pulling away late.
It was like runs, right? There was kind of the early start where the Niners look good. The Chiefs quickly answered back. The Niners have the push right before the half, but it comes away empty. And then, of course, the third quarter was all San Francisco. The fourth quarter, all Kansas City. And that's how it went. It was tied for the second biggest comeback in Super Bowl history, by the way.
Really?
10 points. It just shows that there aren't a whole lot of Super Bowl comebacks.
It was the Patriots of last year.
Obviously, 2016, the 28-3. Unfortunately for Kyle Shanahan, he's been on the wrong side of both of those now. But this was a game that just didn't quite play out the way that I think a lot of people thought it would, though it did end with some Chiefs offensive fireworks. What was kind of the biggest thing that stood out to you from the game?
The Kyle Shanahan storyline, I can't get over it. I mean, people that are defending him now and saying, hey, listen, if that ball, Jimmy Garoppolo overthrows Emmanuel Sanders late, we have a totally different discussion. Garoppolo's MVP. We're talking about the future of the 49ers. Shanahan's the brightest young offensive mind in football. And while I agree with all that, I don't think it should have come to that. I don't think a team that runs the ball so well should have been forced to make their quarterback make plays for them. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it should have ever come to that missed throw. I mean, Garoppolo hasn't been good all year. Oh, I'm sorry, hadn't been great all year. Right. Hasn't been clutch all year. Those are things we know. So when it comes to the biggest game of the year, he abandons the run, Kyle Shanahan, that is, again, just like he did with the with the Atlanta Falcons when they were up 28-3 against the Patriots. Devontae Freeman, who that season had his breakout year, disappeared in the Super Bowl. And it was a huge problem. And we see guys outthinking themselves when really it's like, listen, they're not scoring with you right now. You held them to 10 points. I guess I should clarify. The Chiefs were held to 10 points in the fourth quarter. This team who's been the Chiefs have been a comeback machine. Why give Patrick Mahomes
an opportunity?
Yeah. Because that D-line of the 49ers was absolutely
gassed.
Eating the... Yes,
oh, they were good, but they were gassed by the end.
They were gassed by the end. That's what I'm saying. They were absolutely eating them up for probably 3.5 full quarters. Even at the end, they were still getting pressure, and Mahomes is rolling out, able to make something happen. It just should have never come to that, and that came down to coaching to me. I don't think any player failed to execute for the 49ers.
It's kind of funny that it's perfect segue into what I think my biggest storyline was, and that's that I think that the Chiefs defense was the MVP of the game. And what they did to adjust throughout the course of the game, because the Niners had a couple of big plays through the air, but really they were doing what they wanted to do on the ground throughout most of the first half and especially the third quarter. And then all of a sudden, I think part of the reason why they abandoned the run was because the Chiefs started stopping the run. I mean, Mostert's going for 1 yard. Coleman's going for 2 yards. And then you're sitting there looking at 2nd and 8 or 2nd and 9 and going, well, should I throw here? You know, that's – credit the Chiefs' defense. Chris Jones was a man in the fourth quarter. When he wasn't stopping the run, he's batting down passes.
Yep.
I mean, Jimmy G had guys
open.
That
was a huge bat down, too.
And he did multiple of them.
Yeah.
He had a couple on
those
final – I'm
talking about the one late. Was that the – drive that would have potentially put him away.
Yeah.
And then they threw back-to-back plays, one being a bat down.
And they had not forced a stop. You know, there had not been a punt all game until the fourth. And they forced back-to-back punts, and then you're 4 and out to end the game. And that's what gave the Chiefs even a chance. The Niners get the ball back with like 6.5 to play. And I go, this is perfect. This is exactly how San Francisco drew it up. They're up 10 in the fourth with an offense that is perfectly built to run 4.5 minutes off the clock right here, get points, maybe even not get points, and continue to salt this game away. And what do? They go 3 and out. And they never had a legitimate shot outside of the deep pass to Sanders that was missed the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And it was
done from there.
And if I could have given the Chiefs defense the MVP award, I would have given him the MVP award.
I think that's a great storyline, and I don't know why I haven't thought about that.
Credit to Steve Spagnuolo, the D coordinator, too,
for
scheming it up.
For how about this?
And adjusting.
Not just scheming it up in that game. The whole second half of the season,
they got so much better on defense.
He did something totally different. And you want to mention Chris Jones? We'd be remiss not to mention our Noel.
Derek Nnadi.
His partner in crime at defensive tackle, Derek Nnadi, had a phenomenal game.
Yes,
he was in the backfield almost the whole first three quarters, clogging up running lanes. I mean, he's a really good player. They have some bright spots on that defense. They have speed, athleticism, and all that. Of course, the Honey Badger looks rejuvenated because they started playing him in the box.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that needs to be around the football.
He's like a Polamalu type.
Well, he wasn't in the beginning of the year, but he is very Polamalu now.
Yes.
Yeah.
You just have to like kind of let him roam.
Yeah.
And be free.
Put him near the ball, and he let his instincts do the play.
Mm-hmm.
You basically scheme up your defense, and he doesn't have a play to run. You know what I mean? If he's not blitzing, his play is roam. It's like,
hey, trust him.
Hey, Matthew, Tyrann Mathieu, you're blitzing this play. Oh, okay, I got you. Which gap? That's all he needs to know. And then everything else, you just say, okay, you're not blitzing this play. Those are his two plays, a blitz or a non-blitz.
and then trust his instincts the rest of the way.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, but the secondary in whole really has come together and started playing well. So you're right. The MVP should probably go there because Mahomes, although he won MVP.
That's the worst game he played all year.
No doubt.
Like he won Super Bowl MVP in the worst. Maybe that just also speaks to Patrick Mahomes' ability. But the fact that he was able to throw a couple touchdowns, run for another one, and engineer a comeback to win a Super Bowl in the worst game he played of the season.
The one that he ran in wasn't that impressive. You know what I mean? There's tons of guys that can do that.
It was the 1 yard line.
Right. Tons of guys that can do that from the one. I just think Damian Williams was a guy that was consistent throughout the game. That's the true MVP. And I've heard a lot of people say that, so it's no longer a hot take. Right when the game ended, that's how I felt. So I won't even harp on it. It's like I was like, you know what? Mahomes didn't even look good. The 49ers defense had him rattled.
They did.
And then he threw that one play where he bought just enough time, that bomb to Tyreek Hill.
Yeah,
on that was third and 15.
That was the turning point.
And that was the game.
But it was wild because Mahomes, you know, I always find it so fascinating watching the NFL and especially elite players when they're not playing elite. It just feels like something's so wrong.
Yeah.
Like seeing Patrick Mahomes miss receivers, you like want to walk up to him and be like, "Pat, what's wrong, man? Like you're not right. What's wrong with you?"
Kind of felt bad for him, didn't you?
And you know, I don't know that this is entirely speculation on my part, which could be irresponsible, but you know, he had that run early in the game and got blown up. Now he pops right up, looks down at the guy.
The safety was
actually down.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I do wonder if he got even a little bit shook up by that at any point. And then if he did that kind of affect the way he was throwing a little bit in the second half, or maybe a little bit of his happy feet in the pocket? Because, like you said, that D-line was collapsing.
Yeah.
It was in his face. And he's the king of the uncomfortable throw. Like, he's good at that. He's almost comfortable being uncomfortable, but he's short-arming everything, and he's behind guys and short on guys. And, you know, it worked once, I guess, when you saw like the PI kind of late in the game because of an underthrown ball. But he just wasn't, outside of a couple of throws, didn't look like the Patrick Mahomes. But he was able to make the plays when he needed to down the stretch. And, you know, credit him and credit Damian Williams, like you said. I mean, he's the one that put the game on ice. He's the one that had big runs. At one point in that first half, it was like, man, these running games are these going to define kind of the way this game goes? And sure enough, it kind of felt like it did. So really good job by Damian Williams and this Kansas City offense. Is they were able to just figure it out late, and Andy Reid finally gets a chance to get the monkey off his back, which I think is the – no matter who you're a fan of.
I loved
outside of
that.
Maybe if you were a 49ers fan, and I know we've joked all year long that we're a Niners podcast and stuff like that, but outside of the true Niners
fans.
Yeah,
true. I forgot we're heartbroken about this.
Yeah. Outside of true Niners fans, and even some true Niners fans, have to have a little part of them that feels like, you know what, this is – Andy Reid deserves this. I mean, he is now a lock for the Hall of Fame. He's an inventive coach who has finally got that chance to put something in the trophy case and a rock on the finger to show for all of his hard work over the years.
Yeah, I was really happy for Andy Reid. And as much as I disdain Tyreek Hill, I like all the other players on that team.
Yeah,
the
rest
Watkins
of the team is very, very likable.
I mean, Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman, those guys are really fun to watch. I guess I don't really like Travis Kelce, but we've talked about that.
Kelce, yeah, like he's just like he's just obnoxious.
He's a little
punk.
He's
not like a bad dude.
No.
You know, that's why we don't like Tyreek Hill.
So, obviously, they opened up as the favorites to win it again. Vegas already has them favorites to win it again for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Some other teams at the top actually would surprise you. I mean, the Cowboys are up there. The Chargers are third or second or third, I think.
With who as their quarterback?
I think the speculation is
that
Tom Brady's
going to go there.
I mean, Vegas, why would they put odds on that?
That's the biggest storyline of the offseason now, where Tom Brady ends up.
I still feel like he's going to stay with the Patriots, but there is a lot of unknown with it, and I can't steal this take. But let me tell you what Dan Patrick was saying today, because I know we both respect him a lot.
Oh, yeah.
In the beginning of this whole, I don't want to call it a fiasco. How are those cookies, Ashley? You're really rattling around over there. Pretty good?
Gotta love the Chips Deluxe, in which, what, do you get three cookies in there?
They're like three.
Three cookies.
The package could fit 10.
Don't overdo it.
But the air has to, you know, take up most of those.
Oh, yeah. They pump it with air and then drop two cookies in there. Yeah. And then the back says 140 calories, and you're like, oh.
Like, for this whole package, this is great.
You think it's a deal. Okay, well, anyway, thank you to our number one fan, Ashley. You know, dinner and a show or dessert and a show. So you're welcome for the entertainment, Ash. anyway, Tom Brady in the beginning, Dan Patrick goes, there's no doubt he's staying in New England.
Yep.
And then as he hears more and more, and from what I understand from what he said today, he's starting to think, not so much the Raiders, but he thinks the Chargers have a shot, and then there's been speculation that he might go join Vrabel in Nashville. It doesn't seem like he feels that way. I think he's starting to lean. He's not there yet, but he's starting to lean towards him potentially going because Bill Belichick's been quiet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Robert Kraft comes out and says, oh, we're going to pay him 30. We'd love to offer him 30 mil. Tom Brady's a Patriot. We want him here. But then Belichick might not want him anymore. He might think he's past his prime.
That's the biggest thing I've heard throughout this whole thing.
And they're saying
if he doesn't come back, it's Belichick's choice, not Brady's.
Correct. It sounds like Brady would like to stay, but knows that
relationship's kind of... Here's the biggest.
Belichick will cut his own wife. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt.
Here is the biggest wild card one, and I heard this from Bill Barnwell on Monday. He said, if, and this is the craziest thing, if the 49ers elected to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo tomorrow, no dead money against the cap.
What?
None. That's the way the contract is structured. So if they elected to cut him, no dead money. Obviously, they would have to pay him what he's owed or whatever, but
yeah.
No dead money against the cap. Where did Tom Brady grow up?
Yeah.
In California.
Palo Alto, right?
Huge Niners fan growing up.
Yep.
Was at the catch.
Joe Montana. Yep. He's a huge Joe Montana fan.
Could they make a move? Now, that is like a 0.01, it feels like. But
it does feel like that, because why would they?
It's a fun speculation one.
Yeah. A bird in hand is better than a bird. Two in the bush.
Yeah.
It kind of feels that way where it's
with Jimmy G.
Yeah. But does Jimmy G.
You could win a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Okay.
Well, you basically almost did.
Is he going to get any better, though? I agree with you, because they obviously almost did. But how many years are you going to be able to sustain success at the elite level they did with a running offense?
That's true, because we have seen how that has not... That'll be the thing I'm most curious about next year with the 49ers, is are they able to replicate this next year? Because... What the last couple of years, we have seen teams that have been really good rushing attacks with really strong defenses and iffy quarterback play not be able to come back the next year.
Yeah.
Last year was the Chicago Bears. The year before that, it was the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
So is this something? Now, I think Garoppolo
Titans
is better
also,
than.
Also, I know they weren't to the
true.
To the
yeah,
Super Bowl.
They're a good example next year,
we'll see
too.
What happens to them.
With middling quarterback play, though, I think that Garoppolo is better than Tannehill and Bortles. But because Garoppolo was good in the first half.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing with Garoppolo is he clutch? And I think we've seen that he has not been able to prove himself to be so yet. But he can play. I mean, he outdueled Drew Brees in New Orleans this year and the Saints in a tough play.
That's really the only game he has on his resume, though, where he just slung it and played ball. Like this game just two nights ago, Deebo Samuel was making a lot of plays for him. I don't feel like Garoppolo was like, you say he was playing well. Yeah, he was playing statistically. But
right, he was throwing the ball to open receivers.
But it's all dump-offs, and they were short. It's not a question of is he accurate. We know he's accurate. That's not his issue. It's like, can he drop back and push the ball downfield?
Yeah.
That he can't do.
I guess we'll find out next year if he's able to take another step forward or if he's kind of what he is at this point in time. But you have any other thoughts on this Super Bowl or anything? I mean, I'm sure everybody else has hashed out the rest of it, trying to
most of it's already been hashed out, so I won't dive into regurgitated takes here.
Yeah, it was just like it's good to see fresh blood in the Kansas City Chiefs, fresh blood, and it'll be the other interesting fact coming out of the Super Bowl between these two teams. We just talked about what the Niners are. Is this the start of a dynasty for the Chiefs? And that's the question. They got to figure out if they're able to retain some of these pieces, because including Pat Mahomes, they're going to have to pay him. I mean, the question is not whether they're going to retain Pat Mahomes. It's how much money do they pay him, and then how much money do they have left for everybody else?
Yeah, and that's going to be the key. If you want to talk about money and speculation and free agency, I read here's two teams – well, actually, two items. Item one, 49ers lose basically no one. And they're an extremely young team. I think all they might lose is Richard Sherman. And at this point, yeah, he had a great year. It's a zone-based scheme. You can find someone.
You can find somebody else to do that.
Right. With more athleticism, because Richard Sherman's mind is why he's still good. He got beat when you look at physical attributes. Sammy Watkins roasted him on a play. So that's thought number one. Thought number two, if we're sticking to free agency, cap money, blah, 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 blah. The Buffalo Bills, I just heard today, have $90 million. Yeah, no one circles wagons like the Buffalo Bills. So $90 million.
Wow.
$90 million.
And that's already a pretty good like base nucleus there.
The nucleus is there.
They just need a couple of
the toughness is there. The culture is there.
They just need a couple of like playmakers.
I would say so. I would definitely say so. I mean, Singleton's a nice little piece in the backfield. Probably is a compliment guy.
Mm-hmm.
But
and more targets for Josh Allen in the future to throw to.
Yeah,
like
they don't have a true number one receiver
or a tight end.
Good
they
point.
They could use both.
He's probably a guy that loves tight ends.
Oh my God! Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
that type of offense seems built for it.
Yeah, it does.
Chip, leak out over the middle, dump off into the flat, things like that.
Yeah, boring. Just nice and boring.
Trick your lighting the ball down the field.
Was that your Chris Berman?
It was like a hybrid Chris Berman something else. I don't know.
I thought it was pretty good though.
Yeah.
Unique.
What? So football's over.
R.I.P.
Kind of.
R.I.P.
Kind of.
Oh.
What I mean by kind of, Alex Turco, is that this weekend, a different kind of football kicks off. It is the debut.
Saturday or Sunday,
Oliver
are they
Luck
playing?
And Vince McMahon's XFL. And I do believe they start on Saturday. And
oh, you need
yes,
some.
Saturday, February 8th. Seattle at D.C., 2 o'clock,
oh,
ABC.
Oh, baby, I'm cooking.
L.A. at Houston, 5 o'clock on Fox.
I like
it. And then Sunday, February 9th, Tampa Bay at New York, 2 p.m. on Fox. St. Louis at Dallas, 5 p.m. on ESPN. Do you actually care about the XFL?
No, I could give a shit, and I didn't know it started this weekend. I knew it was coming up. But
that's smart though. Go, don't leave a gap. Don't like fall straight in.
Good for them. No time for anyone to not be excited. Just roll right into it. I'll tell you right now, this is on the field related. Yes. I actually think I might need to get me a little XFL gear.
Yeah, who are you gonna root for?
I don't know.
DC, New York, St. Louis, Tampa Bay, Dallas, Houston, LA, or Seattle.
Part of me wants to say Tampa Bay because they're right
here.
Yeah,
they're the local.
But I'd rather look at logos. For this type of league, I'd be like, you know what? They have the coolest logo. Mm. And the XFL shield compared to the NFL shield, it's a little more trendy, a little more pop, has a little pizzazz like you would expect from a Vince McMahon product. But also, I don't think the XFL is going to last just like it didn't last time. So I would love to get a little XFL polo or something.
Bad radio here. We're looking at the logos for the Dallas Roughnecks, the Houston
Roughnecks.
Oh, that's
Roughnecks. Our boy. That's
we have
our
multiple Roughnecks.
Florida State's head football coach Bob Stoops coaches the Dallas Renegades.
I'm reading that wrong. The Renegades, excuse me, and then the Houston Roughnecks.
What'd you call them, Rednecks?
Yeah, no, I read Roughnecks twice.
Oh, okay.
L.A. Wildcats.
Yeah, that logo.
The
sucks.
New York Guardians.
I actually really
the St.
like
St. Louis Battlehawks.
What's that one? Houston Roughnecks.
Houston Roughnecks. Yeah, it's got a lot of
old
a Houston Oilers.
Oilers
look to it. Yeah,
I might root for Houston.
Seattle Dragons. Isn't that the name of the new? I feel like that's the name of the new NHL team too.
The Dragon,
Tampa Bay Vipers.
The Dragon looks
and
stupid.
And the DC Defenders. I'm going either Houston or DC here as far as logos.
DC
are
on the right. Yeah, logo.
Yeah,
looks
you like
good.
The little shield there. Yeah, it's like
for
a Captain America.
You,
feel.
Since we're doing bad radio here, I would on your own Google.
Yeah,
the
just
Roughnecks.
Google XFL logo.
I think I'm gonna be a Houston Roughnecks.
Houston
fan.
Roughnecks fan.
I'm gonna pull up their roster.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
See
you,
if they have anybody else good.
Also, Bob Stoops' team there. That's a pretty cool logo.
Yeah, it's decent. It looks like a made-up Madden team, but...
It definitely does.
Yeah. The Flycraft. Only my brother will get that joke. So there's a lot of new rules, by the way, in this XFL. This is how they're trying to get people in. They're not trying to recreate the NFL.
Okay.
They're putting in a bunch of changes. So let me give you some highlights.
Good.
Of these changes.
I'm being really honest right now. I don't know any of them. Not a single one.
Okay. We'll start with the kickoff. Instead of the teams lining up at the 35-yard line, getting off to a running start while the kicker kicks it and then everybody slamming into each other, which is one of the, what they say, the most it's like the highest rate of injury type play, you know, with the, with these kickoffs. They changed it to where the kicker is all by himself on the one end of the field.
Okay.
And then the two teams are within 10 yards of each other down at like around the 20.
So he
kicks it off, and then once the ball is caught, they can start blocking and hitting and trying to make the tackle.
How does a guy who's on the receiving team know the guy behind him caught it?
I don't know if there's a whistle or something like that. It wasn't explained in the video I saw. Maybe you have to turn around and watch it.
You probably
have to turn around and watch it. Yes. You still have 10 yards to get to your guy and engage with him.
Interesting.
So you have time. It's not like he's right across your face and then he can beat you easily. But I like that one, honestly. That's my favorite of the rule changes, because I think that's something, if this works, it could keep – I want to find a way to keep the kickoff in football while making it safer. I get the health concerns.
So here's
and I
my,
think this could work. This could work, potentially.
So what's the point of even kicking it? Why didn't he just, like, backyard bullshit, just hold the ball and say –
Well, because you can still angle and things like that, right? Like, this allows the kicker to, like, position the ball where he wants to.
But he has to get it a certain distance because the guy can't run up past the blockers, right?
No, yeah. So, I mean, but you could put it in the right corner. You could put it in the left corner.
Yeah.
Kick it down the middle. I mean, this way, if you just held the ball, then you just call a specific return, and then everybody just executes it like a running play. And then you still have to field it. You know, there's all that, too. And this way, the kickers still have a job. Come on, man.
Wait.
Allow my specialist brothers to have a job.
I knew your angle had to do with special teams.
Do you like the sound of that one, though?
Scott, I think it's a little corny.
Okay.
I'd rather just... You either do it or you don't.
All right.
And I'm okay with even bringing it. What, am I not allowed to like it? You're laughing at me.
No. I think it's fair. I was just going to run on to the next one since you didn't seem to like this one that much. See if you like the next one.
Oh, was it? Yeah, no. Bring them on, because I don't know any of them. I just think if you're going to kick it off, you need to put the defending team or the kicking team further back to allow for room for maybe the kick returner to run up on a ball or to be in the midst of the blockers if he's running up. Like, are they stationary while he runs up?
But this is literally designed. The whole thing is designed for returns.
Okay.
The whole idea.
For big plays. Yeah.
It's trying to set up big returns.
Yep. Okay.
Like that it's not designed for pooch kicks or
quick hole
things like that.
And,
yeah. Hole and go and then see if you get to the second level.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Hey, how about this? I'm TBA on that.
Okay. Well, the next one you're probably going to be TBA on, too, because it has to do with punts.
Oh, boy.
The punter is punting, but here you go. This is actually it's encouraging returns and going forward on fourth down. If the punter punts the ball into the end zone, it is a touchback to the 35-yard line.
Oh, so they're really, really trying to promote pinning them, coffin corner type stuff.
Guess what? You coffin corner and the ball goes out of bounds, it goes to the 35-yard line.
Oh, so it's really
really trying to just have you punt it into the field of play so it gets returned, or don't punt it.
And your gunners
are
really a big
big piece.
Huh.
Do you like that one a little bit better?
I think that's fun. That's exciting because it really makes a good punter valuable.
Sure.
Because
hang time.
Well, that's what I mean. Because you're losing field position. If your punter sucks,
you have to be able to hit it right.
You're constantly giving up field position. Mm-hmm. Part of punting, the reason some guys are are conservative on the punting is because they trust their punter and they want to win field position battles.
Right.
So if you're losing field position battles, you're going to start going for it more on fourth, which I think leads to a more exciting product also. So in return of punting being critical, it also might lead guys that don't love their punter, coaches that don't love their punter,
just going for
to go for it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in on that.
Okay.
As TBA on that. That's fun.
Here's one on for offense.
Okay.
Double throws are legal. You do not have to throw the ball backward first. As long as the first pass, as long as the pass stays behind the line of scrimmage,
okay,
you can throw it as many times as you want.
Oh.
And it can still go forward.
It can go forward or backwards as long as it's behind the line of scrimmage.
As long as it all stays behind the
Love
line
that.
Of scrimmage. Now, the second the ball goes past the line of scrimmage, you can't throw it forward anymore.
Right. You can still lateral.
You can still lateral and stuff like that. But you can't, be 20 yards down the field and then just chuck it further down the field.
Okay.
I kind of like this one.
You know why I love it, Scott? I've seen it firsthand for multiple years now in my flag football league. I play in a flag football league every fall. I'm probably the best player out. No, I'm kidding.
Sick brag, bro.
No, I'm totally kidding. At 5'8", I am not the best player out there.
He's not kidding.
But in all seriousness, I've seen this executed multiple times by other teams, and it's really cool when, like, for example, a guy is on the line of scrimmage and just turns around and you throw it to him, and then he kind of can do like a flea flicker type action as far as throwing it backwards still to a corner, to a double passer is what we typically call him, but really in that scenario it's a triple passer.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of fun. I've seen it, some creative stuff in flag football, and I think they're bringing that to the XFL. I guess that's what they're doing. I think that could work too, yeah. And well, potentially see that in the NFL.
And here's the biggest thing. How many times have you seen this, like, ridiculous replay where it's dragging out, where they're, like, trying to decide whether or not the ball went 1 inch to the right or to the left to make it a backward pass versus a forward pass? Like, as long as what's a lot easier to figure out, it was the ball behind the line of scrimmage.
I was just going to say that. It will save us
Let's
replay
time.
Let's
clean this up.
Yeah.
You know, I think the thing that
Less
we're coming to
intricacies
here,
when it comes yeah, to the double pass.
I think what we're coming to here is that maybe the best thing the XFL could do is just teach the NFL a few tricks and then fold.
That's what will happen.
Yeah, if the NFL just takes a few good things that come from the XFL and then, you know, whatever happens to the XFL happens to the XFL, because, like, the players aren't going to be as good, so it's
no.
not going to be as exciting. But this could be good. All right, I got one more for you.
Okay.
This one I'm a little less sold on. Overtime. So they're not doing – there's no coin toss. There's no first team that scores a touchdown. There's no full drives. There's no clock. There's no ties.
Okay.
It's a soccer shootout from the 10-yard line.
Oh.
And you run plays and you alternate, and if you score, it counts.
Wait, so you get one play?
You get one play.
Oh.
And you get 2 points each time you score. And then the defense cannot score, but, you know, if they get a stop or whatever, it counts as a stop. So it's just whoever gets to the point where in, like, so you get 5 tries. And then if you get to the point where the other team cannot physically catch you at that point, that's where that's when it ends. So it's the soccer shootout.
That's an amazing rule, too. They're doing a good job being creative, but also not being gimmicky. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's not cheesy or corny like the kick-up. Why, you got a cheesy
one coming
up?
I've got a gimmicky one for
okay,
you to finish.
Okay. Well, that one's not gimmicky. At least give me that. But, mm-hmm. Oh, look at that. Is that the kid from – yeah, it is. We're watching the Milwaukee Bucks game right now. The kid from Villanova.
Yeah, Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah,
the big ragu.
Yeah. I didn't know he's with the Bucks.
Yeah, he got drafted in the first round after he won Most Outstanding Player in the Final Four when they won the national championship.
He's a backup for him, though.
Yeah, he was a 6th man on that Villanova team.
Yeah, true. That's true.
Look very at, athletic guy.
Oh, yeah. Freak
but
athlete.
He's like their backup point guard.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know he played point for them. I thought he might be a 2 behind Middleton.
Well, he's not really a point, but, like, they don't really have a point per se. I guess it's Bledsoe, but anyway.
Yeah. All right. So,
here's
sorry about that.
One.
No. Before you say that, let me say why I like that. Because the NFL overtime
now,
it's terrible. It's long. It's drawn out. And
and it's not fair.
Well,
a coin
because
toss,
the team, yes,
a
the
coin
team
toss that, can be the biggest factor in the game.
Yep.
And I know you can do the whole "we'll get a stop," but
yeah,
like guess what? Like
no,
the other team didn't even have to get a stop. Like you could have if you win the toss and drive down and score, then that's no more fair than it's all
right.
on chance.
Yeah, I don't like the overtime rule right now as it is. I didn't think of a better option until I heard this. I think this is a no-brainer. You get your offense making plays. Everyone's there to watch offense these days anyway.
Mm.
I think it'd be really exciting to see how this one plays out because overtime right now, if it's a defensive game, it's just you're just playing an extra quarter of slow, boring overtime.
Football.
Yeah, you might even see a couple punts in an overtime. This eliminates all the slow. It's basically like watching a game when you can watch the condensed version of games,
mm-hmm.
and it's just play. Cuts out all the huddle, all this. I feel like that's going to be a nice way to speed up the game and keep the action high.
Here's your last one, and this is the gimmicky one.
Okay.
No point after touchdowns, no kicks. They have different points you can earn based off of where you are on the field. So it's like the 5 and like the
there's
10.
No PATs,
so you go for 2, 3, or 4.
Okay, just like flag football.
And then if the defense picks it off and returns it or whatever, they get those points.
Yeah,
And but yeah, there's like a 4-point play or whatever now.
I love that.
The scores are going to be so weird.
Yeah. And you know what?
So weird.
You know what? For traditionalists, that might be a little weird. But right now, they're taking a lot of things from the flag football playbook now.
Yeah,
it
is kind of funny. And you're the guy that plays flag, and I haven't played in a couple of years,
right,
so it's not as fresh in my mind. But you were literally playing a game last night.
I just played last night. That's why we're recording on a Tuesday, not a Monday. It's when you go for it, you can go for one, you can go for two, and it helps with strategy. I mean, when you're up, you typically go for one because your percentage is higher. You're closer to the end zone. I don't think that's as gimmicky as it sounds, because right now, what's exciting about a PAT?
Oh, I mean, I would say the NFL moving it back a couple of years ago has added an element of suspense to it that never existed before.
But the thing is, it's suspense and it lowers the percentage, yes,
yeah,
significantly from what it was, because it was at like 98%. It was something ridiculous.
It was absurd.
Where there was no point in even doing it. It was almost a guarantee. And now it's not a guarantee, but it's not a fun play to watch.
Yes.
At least now this is a play. This is another play where they're going for the end zone. It's not like when you're in the red zone and it's first down, you can kind of set it up with a run, try and get closer. No, you're going for points on this play. So the defense knows where the destination is. They know the play has to get to that end zone, obviously. So I like that. That's not as gimmicky as you set it up to be. I think your little special team stuff is a lot more. It's a lot more gimmicky.
Yeah.
The kick and the punt. Those
the punt
are gimmicks.
Is super gimmicky.
That's super gimmicky.
The kick is just it's the same thing. It just looks different.
Yeah.
Like the structure of it is the same. A guy's kicking the ball off. A guy's fielding it, and people are blocking. That is all the same. But it's just where you're lining people up changes.
I'm anti-special teams from what I've noticed.
What kills me is if you end up watching one of these games early, and now I've explained it to you and I know these rules, so that's good. But like if we turn on a game, say this weekend, you're gonna have to watch it on mute because it's gonna be nothing but announcers explaining these rules over and over and over again.
You're right about that. You're right about that. But you know what? They gotta do that.
Yeah, you have to, because like, most of the casual fans aren't gonna know what's going on. So.
Everyone except our Sports Bar podcast listeners, who are better for it because of us. Or mainly because of you, because you did your XFL research.
So no
Scott,
doubt.
From the bottom of
shout out to my guy Zach at work for hooking me up with the video that explained it.
Oh, they did a little webinar.
Yeah.
See, always developing a little more knowledge before the pod. I love it.
Time now for the Ice Mule Coolers Cold as Ice segment.
You're as cold as ice,
ooh, buddy.
And you know what is cold right now? What is frosty?
Tell me.
The relationship between the Jacksonville Jaguars and its fans.
Oh yeah, that is a cold is an understatement. It is like ice cold, like hell has frozen over is really what it is. And you can have a beer that cold if you get yourself an ice mule loaded up with ice. Of course, to get that ice mule and get a discount, you would go on to icemule.com and check out their all of their promos, or using our promo code here, SportsBar15, to get a discount on all of the Ice Mule products.
Yes, and some great ones. As I said, I used mine this weekend at the Super Bowl party I went to. It's been a great cooler, and I've enjoyed it very, very much. So I have not enjoyed as much is going through these last 2 years as a Jaguars fan, because of the fact that the Jacksonville Jaguars have managed to take all of the goodwill that they generated in this city after the improbable playoff run of 2017, which had them right on the doorstep of the Super Bowl, and just completely drive it into the ground and lose it. Yep. And the fact that the team ends up being uncompetitive the next year because of a couple of bad contract decisions, and then this year make more bad contract decisions, are uncompetitive, don't fire the head coach, bring him back for another year, don't fire the GM, bring him back for another year, fire only Tom Coughlin, get rid of the offensive coordinator, not the defensive coordinator, and really haven't done anything else to really get people excited for next season for the Jaguars. Oh, and then what do they do? By the way, they raise season ticket prices by 5%, because, hey, what do people want to pay more money for? An inferior product, right? Yeah, that's good business. Oh, and here's even better business. Why don't you take away part of that product and move it? So the Jacksonville Jaguars are playing only 6 home games. Oh, wait, excuse me, 8, because the preseason games count as part of your season ticket package because everybody wants those. No, you get 6 games that you actually care about, while 2 of your home games as a Jacksonville Jaguars fan here in this city will now be played across the pond in London. But yes, this team and franchise cares about winning. How does playing in London help you win games? It does not. How does moving more games there speak to how this team and this ownership group is committed to the city of Jacksonville? It does not.
It does the exact opposite.
It does the exact opposite. Oh, and guess what? You're talking about how you can't make enough money and you're breaking even, yet the value of the franchise has gone up millions of dollars since it was purchased back in 2012. And yet you're doing a bunch of sticky things in your stadium, like putting in pools and dog parks as opposed to actually doing things that fans care about,
right?
Like making the concession lines more accessible, or making it easier to get in and out of the stadium, or put a cover on it so that you're not melting because it's 900 degrees in one of your million home games in September at 1 o'clock. No, don't worry about those things, but by all means, go and entertain the fine folks in Brexit-ridden London and give them something to watch for twice a year now while we're down to 6.
It's horrible. And the biggest offense to me is Shad Khan today comes out and says, "I think right now this is the best thing for the Jaguars." That was almost a direct quote. I don't know the exact words because I heard it and I don't have it written in front of me. But Shad Khan says this is the best thing right now for the Jaguars. How is this the best thing for the Jaguars? You know what the best thing is? And what will he's such a businessman. All he's worried about is his ass in seats.
Yep.
Do you know how you do that? You put a good product on the field.
Win games. And it's not that it's not just.
They don't have to win a Super
Bowl.
It's not
purely. I mean, I wish it was X plus Y equals Z. And it's not 100% that. Like, you don't just, like, make unlimited money because you're good. You have to do other things. But that is the biggest piece of it.
And we have a great stadium. It's already done. So these games are in London. I think the only way they can salvage this is make them early in the year when it's so hot it's miserable anyway. Move those, and then by the time the Jags are back, the weather's cooler.
And you hope the team's playing fairly well.
Right.
But man,
right.
Oh man, if we're talking about salvaging things.
I also don't think it's something like if they play one a year, you know what? We're kind of already acclimated to that.
We've gotten used to it.
Yeah. So stick to the one. Put it in the early. If it was just, you know, part of your schedule every year, our home opener is in London. Okay, big deal. The home opener is hot as hell anyway. So maybe just make that part of it. If you really, really need to be in London and have it set up with the NFL where if the Jags are going to London that year, they're the team that goes on the first weekend or the first home opener that would be in Jacksonville.
I will say, not going to a September 15th game in Jacksonville isn't the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
Because the way that stadium's set up right now, I just can't.
You bake.
I got sick this year from, like, sun poisoning.
Yeah.
From a game. Like, I have no desire to ever go to a September game. Because
you get dehydrated. Was that the game?
I went to the Chiefs
game. Chiefs
game.
I remember.
Left early.
I had a ticket, and I said no because
I drank nothing but water in the stadium. Yeah. I drank 4 bottles of water in the stadium.
You can't just sit in direct sunlight.
I didn't help myself by walking home either, but I didn't feel good before that, and then immediately got home, and then was sick, and went to bed.
Died.
Like it was terrible. And this is the thing, like, the Jaguars, instead of moving more games to London, why don't you figure out how to make the stadium better? Because we know, here's the next thing.
Miami did it right.
Get ready for this. So the Jags are doing this stuff, raising season ticket prices, taking away home games. And in another year and a half or 2 years, they're going to come to the city of Jacksonville and say, "Hey, taxpayers, we need to improve the stadium, and you need to pay for it." And what I'm afraid is going to happen is we're going to end up like the San Diego Chargers and going like, "Well, guess what? You can go either find somebody else to build you a stadium or spend your own money on this thing." because we're not getting return on investment, so this isn't worth it.
Yeah, it's a bad situation. And I just wonder, for as smart of a guy as he is, and you know what, his money speaks for himself. Anyone that thinks he's, you know, not bright, he's obviously...
Oh, no, he's a business genius.
But my thing is, and that's my point, for a business genius, how does this make sense?
Oh, this doesn't make sense. Now, it makes sense from a sure monetary standpoint in the fact that, like, bottom line dollars.
But my point...
They're making more dollars in London than they make dollars in Jacksonville.
Right. But
bottom line dollars.
But as a businessman...
It's more than bottom line dollars.
But you have to think long game.
Yes.
And this, to me, doesn't seem like a long play. It's I get this money for going to London this year. Okay, great. But you're losing season ticket sales by the hundred. Yeah. And then this even made it worse. They already were in a tough spot. But then they fire Coughlin. Things felt like, okay, maybe we'll get a little fresh blood in here. No, we're keeping a GM that has proven to not lead this team to higher levels. And I'm not saying he's terrible, but he's certainly not good. Okay? He's had a lot of questionable decisions. Dave Caldwell, that is. And now you're telling us that you're taking home games away from us and you're raising ticket prices. It doesn't make sense at all for a long play move from a business standpoint.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. I think really the biggest thing that you look at here is that these guys are, and I'm 100% convinced of this now. It's about, they're just looking at this as a money thing. Like, they're not invested in winning.
No.
Obviously.
He doesn't.
Because the decisions that have been made.
He doesn't care about the Jaguars.
Or not made.
Wayne Weaver cared about the Jets.
Yeah. How about on the same day that all this news comes out, it comes out that the Weavers make a $200 million donation to the Kummer Museum?
Did they really?
And it's just like, okay, well, here you have a family that was
Jacksonville,
the first family
born
of Jacksonville
and bred, yeah,
that is still investing in the community, and you have another one that is, you know, holding the city hostage for a bunch of incentive money and things like that. Listen, I Shaq Khan, I don't have like a personal beef with him. Like,
no.
I get what he's doing. I don't
know. I like the shipyard's idea. You know what
I mean? Yeah,
he's the one that's fueled
They've executed on quite a few things that he said he's going to do.
But here's his problem. I mean, everything, even the shipyard's example, those of you that aren't Jacksonville natives that listen to this, right by the stadium, there's really nothing to do. Basically, long story short, he's thinking about building an area right by the water that makes it fun and makes it more of a destination area. So you're not just going to the stadium and then leaving. You're hanging out beforehand at those areas and then going to the game and hanging out thereafter. Think it's a great idea. But at the same time, now I look back at the big picture. If you go real high level on all this and you go, you know what? That's another money grab for him too.
Yeah. Oh, it's a money grab. Yeah. I mean, Lot J and the shipyards, by the way, of which we've had proposals and rights to build for multiple years now, and not a shovel has been stuck in the ground.
Nothing's happened.
Because guess what? It's built on a brown zone, and it's contaminated soil, and he still wants the city to clean up the soil before he can build on it. And we got to take down these Hartbridge Expressways for some reason in order to build there. And I don't know. I've just gotten to the point now where it's just – and maybe it's easy for me to say from my 1,000-foot view, and I, you know, don't make a ton of money and don't have – I'm not a millionaire, and I'll never be able to buy a sports franchise.
$200,000 and a lot of money? That's your salary, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you're right. That's what I make per podcast, actually, doing this with you.
Actually, I take that back. If we go circle back a couple episodes, if we worked at Taco Bell,
yeah, well,
and you'd have that $100,000.
Yeah, then I could buy the Jacks.
That's
right. But like, seriously, since I don't own – I will never have the opportunity to own a sports franchise, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but I just don't agree with the principle of buying a sports franchise as a business move. Like, what Mark Cuban did is what every owner should be doing. You should be buying this thing because you're invested. It is a public entertainment thing. It is not a business. And so many of these owners treat it as a bottom line business. And it's like a restaurant. Like, how can I, or whatever. It's like, how can I make as much money on this as possible? Yep. That's not the way you should be thinking. If you're investing in this, it's part of the community. It's part of the culture. And when the team is good, it benefits the community, and it's like a rising tide lifts all ships, right?
Yep.
It helps everything. Your number one goal should be, how do I make this team good? Not how do I make as much money as possible on it? And I thought for a while there that Shad Khan was a guy that was, how do I make this team good?
It felt like he was. But he was saying all the right things in the beginning.
But it turns out it seems like that was all lip service.
No doubt.
And it very much seems like this guy is a bottom line guy.
He definitely is.
Number one, number two.
It's funny you mentioned Mark Cuban, because that's a guy, another one of my beloved franchises is the Pittsburgh Pirates, as most of you know.
And he tried to buy him.
And he did a while back, and he no longer is interested. But at the time,
Which is a shame for the Pirates.
I was dying for him to do it.
You want to talk about bad owners. I mean, we can sit here and complain about Shad Khan, but at least like he's not – the Pirates owners make him look like he's Mark Cuban.
They literally trade everyone they can just to get –
They intentionally try not to win.
Do you know how much our
– they go out of their way to not spend
money. You know what our payroll is?
Oh, it's like $30 million or something.
It's like $43 million is our payroll for our whole team.
Yeah.
There's guys on the Yankees that make more than that. A guy, a singular player. But this is not about baseball. I'm just saying the Mark Cuban example is a perfect example, because that's a guy that realizes you actually – invest into the team, and you are going to make your money back.
Yeah. So, it's disappointing. So, I just hate to see that we've come to this thing already. So, I don't know. Let's go ahead and wrap things up here today, Alex, with a new segment, if you will. How about that? And luckily, it is a rapid-fire segment.
Oh.
And because football is over, We want to be able to get to a special kind of segment here, and it's called, what are we going to call this, like 2-minute drill or something like that?
Maybe. I don't know if it's going to be a reoccurring segment, but the reason
we're going to try it out here.
Yeah. I just wanted to do it. How about this? Most of our listeners are football driven, as we are, but we also follow sports in whole. So for example, my dad listens to this podcast. He doesn't know shit about the NBA. So I think this will benefit him.
Yes, we are squarely in NBA season. Welcome to those of you that don't watch anything else until football ends, because you think that the NBA just tipped off tonight. And for those of you, that are watching this Bucks-Pelicans game with us, welcome. And so with that, you've got 2 minutes, Alex, to catch us up on everything we need to know about the NBA. Go.
Okay, I like the challenge. Did you click it?
Yeah, we're going.
Oh, I'm already clipping. Okay. So the Clippers and the Lakers are leading the West. No surprise there, the two LA teams. LeBron James, balling out per usual, 26 points per game. Anthony Davis, another guy that they have acquired from the Pelicans in the past, 25 points per game. So the Lakers and Clippers atop of the West. A sneaky team that's getting healthy, the Blazers, Damian Lillard and the Portland Trail Blazers, or just Blazers now. Damian Lillard has been on fire
lately. Wait, they're not the Trail Blazers anymore? They're just the Blazers?
They're just the Blazers.
Oh, my God.
That might be the I'm gonna look that biggest breaking news of the entire – no, I'm almost 100%. MVP race right now, as we are close to the All-Star break, looks like
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo. Okay, I was close. I'm never really good at that one. Anyway, he is absolutely tearing teams apart. Truthfully, I haven't looked at his minutes, but he's not even playing fourth quarters sometimes. He's getting a lot of rest. He's averaging 30 points per game, 13 rebounds per game. So the Milwaukee Bucks are leading the East again. No shock there. Number two is quietly the Toronto Raptors. Where am I at? 40 seconds. Okay. Philadelphia 76ers, a little bit of a disappointing year. They're super slow on offense. They have Embiid and Horford. Those are two big guys for those of you that don't know. And if you don't know, I'm judging you, but the 76ers having a pretty bad year, staying in the East. The Atlanta Hawks, Trae Young is a scoring machine, averaging 29 points per game. If you don't remember him, he is the guy from Oklahoma who was very Steph Curry-like, dropping bombs from far away. Okay, not a lot of time here, but they're the worst team in the East. Quietly good years, Miami, the Pacers, Oklahoma City Thunder, the Memphis Grizzlies, who had the second overall draft pick. Damn it, out of time. I wanted to say something about Zion. I tried. Okay, last thing. Steph Curry is debuting next week, I believe. But Golden State's the worst team in the West, so they're terrible. I almost would sit them the rest of the year, because why not?
The Portland Trail Blazers are commonly known as the Blazers, but they are still the Trail Blazers.
Scott, don't you officially know I'm just a slang kind of guy? Blazers for short.
Okay, so next week maybe we'll talk a little college basketball.
Yeah, let's do that. Here's your challenge. Next week, you have to do that for college basketball.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Let's wrap with this, coast to coast. Got a couple of topics for you to hit here quickly before we finish this thing out. First, we'll start with this, a little college football. Mark D'Antonio steps down as the head coach of Michigan State on Tuesday. What are your initial thoughts?
You know, when it first came out, I was like, you know, signing day is tomorrow. National signing day, the second one, is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Wednesday, February 5th. D'Antonio's stepping down right now, the day before. I mean, it's horrible for the school and for the franchise, or for the football team and the program, or program, if you're a good coach, you call it a program.
Program. Yep.
That's the rule. But at the same time, I can't help but think he was outdated, and this is actually going to be good for them in the long run. I think Michigan State is going to surge back with some new blood there. D'Antonio hasn't done anything lately. His team is just a nice 7-8 win team these days, and their offense is outdated. Their defense is it's always good, but they don't beat anyone of meaning. I mean, they hang with Penn State every now and then. That's about it.
It's funny because I know a couple of Michigan State fans, and I kind of want to get their opinion on this, on how they view Mark D'Antonio. Because obviously what he did in East Lansing was tremendous, and it took him to a playoff a couple of years ago. Things like that were kind of unheard of. They dominated Michigan in a series in which they were formerly known as Little Brother, and they yep. made Michigan Little Brother for a long time. And, I mean, you get from everything to the Jalen Watts-Jackson muffed punt recovered in the end zone for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Sean McDonough voice crack game. I mean, some great moments in Michigan State football history.
There are.
Unfortunately, not many of those happened in the last couple of years. You spoke to outdatedness. The offense never seemed to, after Connor Cook graduated, to find its mojo again. And it just felt like D'Antonio lost his touch in a way. And then, like, the ultimate capper is that he hangs on just long enough to collect a $2.5 million bonus on January 25th and then hangs it up the day before signing day, like you said. And I know signing day.
Did he get the bonus in a lump sum?
Yeah. All right, yes, I don't know. But, I mean, he got his
no,
bonus.
No, I mean, him leaving didn't affect his bonus.
Oh, no. He hung out to get the bonus and then resigned.
That's horrible.
Yeah. So, like, I just felt like I soured a lot. I liked him for a long time. I thought he was kind of a curmudgeon, but he was, you know, he was a good coach and things like that. But
and
I
he
kinda,
seemed old school yeah. and hard-nosed. I kind of, at one point, liked him as a Knowles candidate. I
yeah.
know that's a horrible look now. I mean, hindsight, it's obviously the wrong move, and I'm glad we never made it. But I liked his style back when he was still felt like he had the fire.
Yeah. So I kind of soured on him as a coach down the stretch. I thought he had, you know, the first comment on that quote I saw today about the bonus was like, well,
sorry to interrupt you. Ashley just spilt another drink. It wasn't an entire spill. It was just
not the first time
she
on this
bent
podcast.
Over holding a cup of water. Believe it or not, the water doesn't stay in the cup when you bend over, and it dribbled out. And by dribble, I mean, it's pretty wet over
That's
here.
That's what
I
the
mean,
rug's for.
I'll bring my snorkel for. And goggles. It's that much water, but not a ton. Okay, Scott, sorry.
The comment was that, like, D'Antonio shouldn't get the bonus because he technically quit coaching like 18 months ago.
Well,
and,
that's pretty
that
good.
Feels about right.
That's pretty
so,
good.
Depending on who Michigan State hires, this should be, you know, this could go in the right direction. I've seen Luke Fickell's name, the
I've
Cincinnati
seen, yeah,
head coach,
they say
thrown
he's
out a lot.
The leading candidate.
Yeah, if this had happened a couple of months ago, you know, if D'Antonio hadn't decided to hang on and collect that extra money, then I think Matt Campbell would have been because
you
talked
said that
about
here
this,
on the podcast.
Talked about this when we were talking about Matt Campbell as a potential candidate
yep.
on the for Florida State when that job was open. That could be a golden job for him if D'Antonio would step down.
I just wonder how much money they have for football because they obviously invested all in basketball.
Mm-hmm. And Tom Izzo makes a lot of money,
right?
Well, they have $2.5 million last today. So
yeah, that's true. As D'Antonio walks off with it,
yeah.
I'm picturing him with the cash in a briefcase, just walking
doubt.
Off, being like,
no
peace.
Doubt. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Take it easy. Have fun next year. Speaking of signing day, tomorrow is Wednesday, that is National Signing Day. But, man, Alex, it just doesn't feel the same. It lost its luster thanks to the recent rule change in which a couple of years ago the early signing period was added, and really anybody worth their salt these days signs early. And so there aren't a whole lot of big names that are still left on the board. But what are you expecting to see tomorrow? Anything interesting?
You know, it really has lost its luster. It's not a lot of fun anymore. I remember the days when I was younger. There were times where my mom would let me skip school because she knew how big a deal it was to me.
Boy.
It was a Wednesday in February. It's like, why not? So there were times where, depending on how my grades were, she would let me skip school. And those were the days. Not that I'm like that old, but prior to social media and the breaking news, you didn't hear about it till the facts got faxed back to the school. And then the news, and then it was released by the school who they signed. Now, prior to the announcement, Twitter already has the answer. So if you're doing a live ceremony, there, you know, Scott Manzi announces at 10:30 a.m. At 10, you've already been leaked. Everyone knows. So it's not even exciting anymore. I see the reason for the two signing days, but this one completely boring. And Florida State just focusing on our hometown team. Or our team, you know, that we love. Not a lot of guys left, you know. We're going to close out with a couple 3 stars, it looks like, potentially.
Class fillers.
Sounds like, well, you know, these guys are 3 stars for the most part due to whether it's injury or they're from a small town and didn't do the camp circuit. A lot the guys that they have or are new to football. There's a lot
so
of
high
guys.
High upside guys, you hope.
Correct. And as a bridge class for our new coach Norvell, I think it's important to get guys that you can coach and mold that are high upside guys, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that all pans out. But I'll say another school right in our backyard, the Florida Gators, they had a they have a nice class. This is Dan Mullen's best class of any school he's been at. Of course, it's better than his Mississippi State classes, but he is a great class, especially if you count the grad transfers they have coming in. But on both signing days, they've kind of been left at the altar. So, or I guess tomorrow we'll see, or today as you're listening. It looks like a lot of guys that are between Florida and another school aren't settling with Florida. And we'll see how it ends. I mean, that could end up going the other way. Of course, some 12th hour decisions. But we'll see. Not a lot of big names out there like you mentioned.
I can say, since I work in collegiate athletics and I happen to sit across the room from the mail room in our office where our fax machine is located, it only gets used still for signing day stuff. And there are multiple signing days. Like, this is a football signing day tomorrow. There's, like, fall signing days for certain sports. There's spring signing days for certain sports. It's, like, a handful of different ones. But it's funny because all of a sudden our compliance guy will come around the corner and he'll be fiddling around with the fax machine. And did you know nowadays you can just take a picture of the letter of intent and, like, text it in? Email it as an attachment
Which
or whatever.
Which makes sense. It's 20.
Exactly. So like that counts. Like there's so many different ways to do it that don't involve fax, but there's still a couple of hangers on.
Love the fax noise though. It's classic. The sound a fax machine makes. Don't imitate it.
Yeah, I won't. I'm curious. I'm concerned because I think the fax machine is broken in our office.
JU's not getting any football players, it doesn't matter.
It's not going to be a concern
tomorrow. Sky, I just got some breaking news. For our coast-to-coast segment, I think it is very fitting that this just came through on my phone.
Okay.
Speaking East Coast to West Coast, Mookie Betts and David Price.
Traded?
Just got traded from the Boston Red Sox to the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Mookie Betts rumors have been swirling for a couple weeks.
Right, for a long time. I was just talking to my dad recently, and he goes, "Well, he's about to get traded. It's just a matter of where."
Everyone knew the Dodgers wanted him and were closing in on him, so it'll be interesting to see how that pans out for the Dodgers. It's kind of looking like a two-team race this year between the Dodgers and the Yankees.
Boy, oh boy, the Dodgers are so loaded now.
But the Yankees just got Gerrit Cole. So
they're loaded too.
They're both loaded. I think it's a two-team race, barring injury, of course. But I think that's a huge deal. David Price doesn't even need to be their ace. And I think that's going to be
that's good because he's not.
No. he's way past the ace time period. But you know what? In the playoffs, David Price has never really done anything until recent. He had that one game.
Yep.
And he finally got the monkey off his back. Maybe a little change of scenery here, West Coast, on a really good team.
David Price is one of those underrated, like, well-traveled guys. You're like, wait, he's been – so he's obviously well-known for being on the Rays coming up.
Detroit.
And was an ace, and then he ends up in Detroit.
Yeah.
He goes to Toronto for a playoff push.
Oh, my God.
Then signs with...
You know, I forgot about the Blue Jays.
Yeah, he got traded to the Blue Jays for the playoffs, ends up on the Red Sox after that, and now he goes to the NL for the first time.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild, but boy, oh boy, we've had a much busier offseason in baseball this year for a variety of reasons than we have had in recent years.
That's right,
and hopefully that means that we have a good season in baseball. I mean, I'm excited for
here. I'm write this down. I came up. Me and my cousin were talking about the Pirates, bitching about
they're not going to win many games this year.
Talking about a get off my lawn segment. God, we should have my cousin Noah on, and me and him will just bitch about the Pirates. He'll go on. Or my dad. You really want to hear some complaints.
Yeah.
Man, he'll give it to you. But next week, or actually when we get closer to baseball, I want to discuss, I came up with how to fix baseball.
Okay.
I think I fixed it.
Ooh,
there's a lot of logistics to it, but write that down. Remind me, because I won't forget
it. We're going to revisit
that. I love
Alex,
my...
Alex, coming up. After the break, which happens to last a week, Alex Turco fixes baseball.
So, believe it or not, I love my own idea.
Okay. Well, God, I'd hope so. Be bad if he didn't. Well, he is Alex, and he thinks he fixed baseball. I'm Scott, and I like baseball for what it is, a place for me to spit seeds and drink beer. But we're out from pitchers and catchers reporting, and we'll be talking more about that, as well as plenty of other sports coming
up here. Basketball, whether you like it or not. And
welcome basketball. Maybe we'll fit in on
goodbye
NHL
football,
at some
point. Maybe XFL. Maybe we become an XFL podcast.
Yeah, well, stay tuned next week. You'll find out.
I guess my homework
whether or not
is,
we end up actually watching any of these games coming up.
Guess my
weekend.
Homework is watch it on Saturday.
But it has been au revoir. Happy trails to football season. The official college football and NFL are in the rearview mirror, and we'll miss it. But, you know, it'll be back before we know it, and we'll have plenty of football talk for you all throughout the offseason. No need to worry about that. He's Alex. I'm Scott. This has been a post-Super Bowl, post-football edition of the Sports Bar Podcast.
Go Houston Roughnecks.